This is an ABC podcast.
The people of Timor-Leste woke up on Sunday morning to an extraordinary situation. Large parts of their capital, Dili, were underwater.
The presidential palace, embassies, hospitals, they'd all been inundated after more than 24 hours of torrential rain.
Footage shows raging floodwaters sweeping away homes, vehicles and livestock.
In my village, the water is higher than my head. It has not yet subsided.
My house is by the sea. The water rose up and entered our house. Everything is ruined. Everything flooded, so we took refuge here.
It's come at the exact moment that the country is scrambling to control a major COVID outbreak. I'm Stephen Smiley.
And I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre. And today on The Signal, the scope of the Easter weekend floods in Timor-Leste is yet to be fully revealed. And the death toll is still climbing. We survey the damage so far and find out what it means for the country's knife-edge moment in the pandemic. So if you weren't reading the news closely, you might have missed this one. But Dili, the capital of Timor-Leste, one of our closest neighbouring countries, that's 700 kilometres northwest of Darwin, spent Easter largely submerged.
Yeah, and it wasn't just Dili. There was torrential rain across the border in eastern Indonesia and in other parts of Timor-Leste too. Overall, more than 150 people have died, lots of them in landslides, and more than 70 are still missing.
It is still cyclone season, which means torrential rain in this part of the world pretty much every year, but locals are saying this is the worst flood in 40 years. And it's coming at a particularly bad time. Not that there's ever a good time for a flood, but it happens to have come as Timor-Leste is trying to contain its first serious COVID outbreak. And less than a week before its vaccine rollout was due to begin.
Yes, my complete name is Raimundus Oki. Most of my friends, they just call my last name. They just call me Oki. I am a journalist based here in Dili, in Timor-Leste.
The biggest rain was Saturday night. It's non-stop. It's starting from 11 a.m. until Sunday midday. It's very, very big. I mean, the Saturday night, the whole night, people who are in the affected area, they are not sleep because the flood is already coming to their homes. And on Sunday morning, it's the whole city of Dili full of mud.
And when people's homes were flooded, where did they go? Did people know what to do?
Some of them went to the church and schools, and some of them they fled to some public offices, like some of them in the finance minister office. There are several church hall in the capital. And most of the people, they fled to the church hall.
And so they must have been moving out of their homes, trying to escape the water, potentially in the middle of the night, right? Like some of this was happening in the dark. It must have been very confused.
Yes, yes. So when the flood coming to the city and the power also went off, the power also went out. My experience since Saturday night and the whole Sunday, I can't use my phone because of there's no power.
So you have people fleeing their homes in torrential rain, some of them in pitch black, without any means to communicate. It's chaotic and terrifying, people scrambling in their thousands to official evacuation centres, but also makeshift ones, like the finance minister's office, apparently.
And the heaviest rain relented on Sunday, but it's still been raining intermittently since, and more rain is forecast throughout this week. Power and the internet have been patchy since, lots of roads are still cut off, and to top it off, there's been misinformation doing the rounds.
And it's make all of the people here in Dili feel a little bit worried because there are also fake news spread very, very fast in the social media platform, which is talking about that there's possibility will happen tsunami.
and like yesterday.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Yeah, but that's hoax. That's a fake news which spread on the social media platform here in Delhi.
So there's a lot of confusion still in the capital, not to mention more remote places that are still isolated. But there's another dimension to the crisis which is yet to play out, and that's what the flood means for Timor-Leste's burgeoning COVID outbreak.
If you do see flooding here, you know, of course, it's usually the poor neighbourhoods and the low-lying areas that are most affected, but in this instance, actually some of the most prominent buildings in the city have been badly affected by this.
So it's sort of like if downtown Sydney or downtown Melbourne was all of a sudden unexpectedly underwater.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some great drone photos that you might have seen where you can just see the grid of the city is just, brown waterways, essentially. You know, so all the roads were submerged in the centre of town.
This is Dr. Jeremy Beckett. He's an Australian GP who's been working in Timor-Leste for 5 years, most recently as the director of an NGO called Maluk Timor. It's a health and development organisation which works with the Timorese government on primary healthcare.
There was a lot of flooding outside the National Hospital. The National Laboratory, where they've been doing all the COVID testing, was filled with mud. Thankfully, they've remained operational. The major warehouse for medical supplies and medications, consumables and so on, including the place where they intend to house the incoming COVID vaccine called SAMES, that was heavily flooded with, I think, quite a lot of loss of supplies. And I'm yet to hear an update on what the state of the National Repository of Medicines and Supplies is and to what sort of impact this has had on terms of COVID supplies, PPE and essential medicines and so on. That'll obviously be a big question to answer.
So as we've mentioned, the timing of this flood really couldn't be worse. Because for 11 months, the country had a pretty charmed run in managing the pandemic.
You know, Timor-Leste went through the same sort of paroxysm of shock and fear as everywhere did back in, you know, March last year when COVID was really taking hold around the world. And there was a sense of that impending doom that, you know, that this thing was going to come crashing over Timor-Leste like a wave and really put its fairly fragile health system to the sword. But the government took, you know, really impressive and assertive action, just got straight on the front foot with closing borders and instituting lab testing. That was with a lot of support from Australia and also other partners. And then they instituted a very robust system of quarantining returning travellers and contact tracing and a fairly detailed approach to surveillance. Lab testing, which wasn't initially available in country, was fairly quickly set up with support from Australia and has been maintained every day since. Even yesterday when they were shoveling mud out of the lab, they were managing to run COVID tests and maintain that service. But then, you know, things went very quiet, I suppose, from about June through to December, where we didn't really have any cases other than people in the quarantine facilities who were the return travellers. But gradually there was a sense of concern as we heard of more and more cases on the other side of the Indonesian border. And as more and more returned travellers were testing positive, it became clear that the virus had a pretty strong hold over in West Timor. And so with a border that's known to be a little bit porous, with people able to traverse the border without necessarily being registered or tested, there was a sense that probably this thing would eventually come. And then sure enough, it was really through March we saw those cases start to take hold. And over the last couple of weeks, I think it's been described as being around 50 clusters of cases within Delhi itself. You know, I mean, some of our staff have tested positive and we've all had to be contact traced and isolated and so on. And so it's been a real change in the mood over the last few weeks, where there's a sense of, well, COVID's really here now. And now it's a race against time to get the vaccine and to protect the communities as best we can.
So after a dream run, things had started to get out of hand in March and a lockdown was implemented. Until the worst flood in decades meant that for literally thousands of people, staying home was no longer an option.
We know that some people in Delhi had to flee their homes. Where are people like that sheltering and, you know, how crowded are those places?
Yeah, so we had some very heavy flooding, but not this severe, in March last year. And that, I guess, was a good test run for this one. It didn't feel like it at the time, but lessons were learnt in the way that was handled. And so a number of evacuation centres were designated, should such a thing happen again. And those evacuation centres have been put to use on Sunday. And so I don't have the exact figures of how many people are in those centres. We know that around 2,000 households have been affected. And so, you know, that number certainly runs into the thousands. I did hear this morning that one of the centres has around 3,000 people in it. And I think that's a very difficult situation to manage when those centres are not fully equipped with the kind of sanitation support that you would want. And of course, you know, trying to maintain some sort of mitigation of COVID risk in that situation is, you know, incredibly difficult. You know, there are practical limitations to what you can do when you've got such a crowded environment. I think people are rightly concerned that this will give the pandemic a bit of a boost in all the wrong ways, and that we might expect to see perhaps some higher case numbers when we're able to really assess that.
And Jeremy, what about the vaccination program? Because there was this suggestion that a plane with vaccines was going to struggle to land, but it was able to land. Where is Timor-Leste up to with the rollout of a vaccination program?
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, plans are well underway. The training for the vaccine rollout has already gone out nationally. As you say, there was concern that first plane with the first vaccines on board was not going to be able to land because the airport is in a very low-lying area. But thankfully, it did manage to land, and we're pleased to have the first 24,000 doses provided through the COVAX facility now in country. And that's obviously the first of hopefully many. So I think loosely, things remain on track in that the schedule, I think I heard maybe 2 or 3 months ago, was that the vaccine would be first rolled out from the 7th of April, and that still looks possible. So hopefully this hasn't interrupted the vaccine timeline too much, although obviously it'll put a lot of strain on health services more broadly. And I guess we'll, you know, be very challenging if we see more COVID cases as a result of changes in people's living situations.
So we asked both Oki and Jeremy about the public mood there at the moment, and both of them gave us a sort of surprising answer, basically that even though people were distressed about what they'd lost and very worried about what comes next, that there was also this sense of perspective about what they were going through.
I mean, Timorese people in many ways are used to living with worse. You know, they've had tuberculosis, malaria and malnutrition and dengue and other things, you know, as part of their normal existence. And so, you know, COVID was just one more challenge. And then when we see something like this, you know, this kind of natural disaster, the Timorese know how to survive on very little, and they know how to, you know, to rebuild from crises and from setbacks. And so I expect once again, we'll see it won't be too long before the Timorese people turn this situation around.
That is The Signal for today. We'll be back in your feed with a whole new episode at the same time tomorrow.
We'll catch you then. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.